Hello, I'm Scott Miller. I'm the Deputy Undersecretary at the Smithsonian covering science collections and a number of other things. It's my pleasure to welcome you to the Smithsonian Institution and particularly to this lovely auditorium which the National Museum of the American Indian has made available for us today. As most of you know, invasive species are among the most significant drivers of species endangerment and extinction. They have substantial impacts on the economy, health, infrastructure, cultural resources, and a wide range of other things, even those nasty weeds in your own backyard. The Innovation Summit today is intended to introduce technology, innovations that have the potential to be game changers to enable us to overcome some of these most problematic invasive species issues. To date, most of the technologies that are used to address invasive species issues are applied in the research and monitoring context, and most of them are really parts of a long-established toolbox. We now have a strong interest in applying advanced technologies in all aspects of invasive species issues, from prevention, detection, eradication, control, and restoration. The scale of the problem necessitates that we find ways to invest in cost-effective and time-efficient technologies. This summit was designed to attract technology innovators to invasive species challenges in the hope that new innovations will be inspired or will find new ways to use existing technologies to do things with invasive species. We'll also be talking about how to better incentivize technology innovation as well as the social and regulatory issues that are necessary to provide ways forward. We have nearly 300 registrants today, some from as far away as Australia. The audience is largely composed of representatives of government agencies, federal, state, tribal, local, a number of people from non-governmental organizations, private corporations, including some technology firms, and academic institutions. Couple of logistic items. The museum opens at 10 o'clock, so we don't have the same access to that front area that we did as you were registering. So because of that and the logistics of moving people in and out of this auditorium quickly, we have not actually scheduled breaks in the program, but we've allowed for a longer lunch period to allow you to meet your neighbors and find innovative solutions to your problems. Restrooms are located right across from the registration tables. You're on your own for lunch. There's a number of restaurants in the area, but the museum cafeteria here is actually really excellent and is one of our two best cafeterias at the Smithsonian, matched only by the new one at the National Museum of African American History and Culture. We have a reception scheduled from 6 to 8 this evening. That reception requires a separate registration, so if you've registered but you don't want to come, let one of the organizers know, and likewise, if you don't have a registration but you want to come, let one of the folks at the registration table or with ribbons on know, and we'll try to accommodate extra folks as best we can. bios and abstracts from the summit presenters are online at www.invasivespecies.gov if you go to the Innovation Summit tag. And for those of you who are into Twitter, if you want to tweet about things today, we have two hashtags that are posted around the room. One of them is Innovasive2016, and the other is We Can Do This, so please feel free to promote things. Finally, I want to acknowledge that the partners in putting this program on today, in addition to the Smithsonian Institution, are the Laura and John Arnold Foundation, the National Invasive Council Secretariat, Island Conservation, Conservation X Labs, and the Aquatic Nuisance Task Force. We thank all of those folks, and especially the Arnold Foundation and the Department of Interior through NISC, who have provided the financial support to make this possible. And so with that, I will introduce the mastermind of today's proceedings, Dr. Jamie Reeser, who is Executive Director of the National Invasive Species Council.
you all for being here. So one night when I was six, my mother served grilled cheese sandwiches and tomato soup for dinner. I had such a headache that night that I couldn't even think of focusing on the meal and asked to be excused to go lay down, this is the 1970s, on this extra large gold burlap couch. On the back of the couch, there were buttons sewn in, and in order to distract myself from the pain, I ran a finger around one of the buttons over and over and over again. When I woke up, I was in a hospital that I'd clearly been in for a considerable amount of time. The room was full of flowers and stuffed animals and cards appropriate for a six-year-old. But my eyes fell on a terrarium in that room. It was glass, a long cylinder at the base, a globe at the top. There was moss on inside and some plants. And this little doll of a girl in a red dress and red bonnet with white polka dots. And next to her was a ladybug. The ladybug was so big that it came up to her knees. And as I was lying there considering the disproportionality of the ladybug to the little girl, I heard a voice, or sensed a voice, that said, "You've been brought back for a purpose. You've been brought back to help heal the relationship between people and the planet. And if you do this, everything's going to be just fine. Everything's going to work out." And I thought, okay. I was six. I hadn't made other plans, so that sounded like a good one to follow. So the next day, when my parents arrived in the hospital room doorway with my little sisters to say goodbye because the physicians had said I wasn't going to make it, I knew they were wrong. And when the physicians told my parents that I'd be handicapped for life, I knew they were wrong. And when they said she's never going to get beyond a third grade education, the day I walked into my fourth grade class, I proved them wrong. And the audience goes, "Okay, Jamie, nice story. What the heck does it have to do with invasive species, or for that matter, innovation?" And Jamie's answer is everything. Absolutely everything. Or maybe nothing. So how many of you who have heard this? The invasive species issue is too big, too costly, too difficult, too challenging. Why bother? Why bother applying human resources, financial resources, to addressing an issue that seems seemingly insurmountable? This field of work, these challenges that we have taken on, are undermined by a limiting belief, a mythology of impossibility. And the consequences of that are lives and livelihoods. They are endangerment, extinction, the loss of ecosystem services that provide the air we breathe, the food that goes on our tables, energy, roofs above our head, clothing, and places to renew ourselves, to be able to find that centering space that allow us to take on the next day. They impact cultural resources and even more than that, cultural identity. In Nevada, the Pyramid Lake Paiute are wondering what their future holds as invasive fish outcompete with their native fisheries, fisheries that their entire lives, their entire cultural identity are tied to. And in Hawaii, the native Hawaiian peoples are wondering what's to become of them if we lose the ohia tree, a tree that is their ancestor. How many children is it going to be? How many continents? How many countries? How many states? How many are going to make it? how many will struggle for the rest of their lives with severe disabilities. Somewhere there's a Plecostomus, an armored catfish, or maybe it's a nutria or a green crab, undermining a dam, maybe it's a levee, to such the extent that during our next extreme weather events, it gives way, risking the lives of dozens, hundreds, maybe thousands of people. And in developing countries, the impacts of invasive species are magnified. These are pastoralists' fields, where chromalina or mimosa or any number of other invasives grow to the extent that the women and children can no longer clear the invasives fast enough to grow food. Or in other areas where you have a puntia cactus in livestock areas where the livestock feed on the cactus end up dying from punctures and ulcerations in their mouth and their gut. And the people can no longer make a living on their lands, and so entire communities are getting up and relocating to other areas where they come in conflict with the communities already there. This isn't a is going to, might happen. This is happening right now, today, in many parts of the developing world. So these are limiting beliefs. Too big, too costly, too expensive to take on. Beliefs are hard to change, right? Wrong. You might want paper and pen for this next one. Changing beliefs is a relatively straightforward process. It looks something like this. You start with a belief. In this case, we're talking about limiting beliefs, so it's a belief that doesn't allow you to do as much as you would like to do towards your ultimate outcome. At some point in time, you become open to doubt that that's a relatively useful belief for you to be holding. There's something about a context change, maybe it's time, maybe it's locality, that it's just not fitting. It's not getting you where you need to go. So you move into this place of open to doubt. Maybe there's something else. Maybe there's another belief that would get me further and faster. And so as you become open to possibility, your mind starts to track for those possibilities. What are the options? How might I go through this situation differently than I did before? And you start to test those options. Does option one seem most efficient? Two, three? It's probably two. So let's try that one on, and ultimately you adopt the new belief. This is a process that we go through as individuals subconsciously all the time. It's also a process for institutions, for communities, for nation states. And here's where innovation fits in. Innovation is what can open us to possibility. It's what can show us options for doing things that we thought or that others thought were seemingly intangible, were impossible. It gives us that space to look from different angles, look from different scales, to look through others' eyes. Innovation is what allows us to move from can't to can. Artist James Bertrand said, once we get rid of our traditional thinking, our old thinking, our limiting thinking that no longer fits, we can get on with creating the new future. We can get on with generating possibilities that allow us to envision what was seemingly impossible before. So earlier this year, New Zealand declared that by 2050, they're going to wipe out all invasive predators. That's all invasive rats, stoats, and possums. It's a big undertaking. And they don't know how they're going to achieve it. But they believe that the practical should follow the bold, not vice versa. Be bold and trust that the practical will follow. And we can do this too. The Innovation Summit was designed to enable us to celebrate, to inspire, new technologies that we can apply to invasive species prevention, eradication, control. But we have an intent for the Innovation Summit to be much more than this. The Innovation Summit is intended to help create a culture of innovation within the invasive species community. It's designed to help us move through this process as a field to say, too big, it's too complex. No, we don't think it is anymore. We're open to the possibility that through innovation, that's innovation in technology, innovation in communication, innovation in program management, we can identify and test new options to apply on the ground, around the world, in real-time, cost-efficient ways to get to the point where we can say, we can do this. And if we decide we can, if we believe and listen to our own empowering voice over the voice of those who would choose to limit us, yes, we can do this. Thank you all for being part of it.